know about when you might want to go out and line things up.
So when I put this title together, we put together titles for sermons a month ahead, I noted in my description, I said, the sacred is present in nature, the sacred is present in community, the sacred is present in the sharing of food. So my question today is, what do we mean when we say something is sacred? The first definition in the dictionary is to define sacred something like connected with God or the gods, and then it notes that sacred is dedicated to a religious purpose, and so something deserving veneration. So a lot of the first definitions when I read about sacred were pretty religious ones. There's a synonym in there that talks about things that are revered, things that we hold up high, and that's starting to get a little closer to what I think of as sacred, but maybe not quite there. And often when I am writing a sermon, the dictionary comes out. It comes out pretty early in that process, and it's especially important when I try to think about traditional religious terms like worship, or prayer, or holy, or spiritual. Terms like sacred. I find as a Unitarian Universalist, I need to poke around a bit to find out what translation, what word really starts capturing it for me. For me, I use the word sacred to mean something of high or the highest value, something that's really, really important to me. If I say something's sacred, it's something that needs my attention. It's often a place that needs my gentle attention. And if I have named it sacred, it may even need my protection. For example, if I hear the term something is a sacred trust, it would mean to be a relationship that needs that utmost care. A sacred object to me, maybe something that has really deep connection, may even be some of those utensils we use that were our grandparents, they may feel actually sacred if you've passed a pan down, you've passed a spoon down for years and years. The chalice at a communion service, where the chalice is holding the wine, is considered often a sacred object. Sometimes what's sacred is the quiet time during our day, and it's something that we need to protect if we're going to have that time. One definition of sacred links that word and that concept to respect. It also is this place, where do I give myself space to be awed, to be dazzled? So UU dictionary work is generally not quick. So what would it mean when I say the sacred is present in the sharing of food? What is so sacred about food? We do need food to survive. And when it's something that's missing, we are just painfully aware. And most people here, our idea of missing food is because we've been ill, maybe, or we haven't gotten to eat for a few extra hours. But there are times when people are very painfully aware they're missing food. So the availability of food is key, but can we as humans make food? That question goes out to all of our learners. Can people make food?
Yeah.
How could they make food? That's a good answer. I'm going to get to that because I think I know which part you're talking about. But here's the part I don't know. If you plant a seed in the ground, that seed had to come from some other plant. And if you water it, Karen talked about her sweet potatoes today. If you water a seed, and you put the best fertilizers in the soil, can you actually make the food grow? Can you make the plant get bigger and bigger? Or is it a little bit of a mystery how it's getting bigger and bigger? For me, it's a bit of a mystery. Even if you've got a fish farm and you stock the fish into a lake in its nutrient area, can people actually make a fish get bigger? I don't think so. I think food emerges from some force of life. It comes from life, and ingredients are not something we create. We we can give our credit to something we might name as God or a spirit of life or the energy within, but meal by meal, every ingredient is somehow connected to a mystery. What made that seed get a little bigger and bigger? We can explain the chemistry, but it's hard to imagine what made it grow. And then here's the part where I think we make food. We somehow have to then gather these ingredients and harvest and purchase our food and prepare the food. When we're making cookies, we take all those ingredients together and we make those cookies. Thank gosh for cookies. Look at your shelves. When you're in the kitchen, in your home, or wherever you keep your food, imagine everything it took to get that food onto the shelf. Maybe it's raisins, but they still had to be, they were grapes, and then they got dried out, and they got put in the packaging and shipped, and you went to the grocery store, and you got your car, and you bought them home, or maybe you grew your own. So when I think of the harvesting and the gathering, maybe my thankfulness there is not so much for the mystery, but for the effort it takes. Then when we get to food, there's the eating part. Do you ever anticipate food? Ever think about it ahead of time, the smells? I can remember my mom making stuffing downstairs, and what I wasn't really smelling was the stuffing, but she would always saute celery and onions, and that would be what would go through the house. And then you take your first bite. You have to decide on a plate of food. What are you going to eat first? What are you going to eat last? Are you a systematic eater? Or are you somebody who mixes it up? And then we digest it. It's a reminder that we've taken in food and made use of the bounty. Hopefully we take some time to do that. Even if it's a meal we eat by ourselves, there's so much to be grateful for. And then if we can dine with others, maybe it's snacks at church after the service. When we take in nutrition together, when we react to taste and smell together, and we talk about foods, and we combine foods, and we note our differences. Somebody actually wanted bananas and shredded wheat for breakfast. Who knew? There's an intimacy of sorts when we share a meal. If we go way, way, way back thousands of years, rituals from ancient times included meals and etiquette and the right way you are to enjoy food together. And food is a part of virtually all rites of passage in every church. Last year, when we had this bread communion service, we had the dedication of one of Diane's grandchildren. And food was a part of that, not only during the service, but a big feast over at their home. But I want to read one small place, and I would say after I read this, Vita, you might want to line folks up, but at wedding banquets, how many people here have been to a wedding? How many people have been to a really big wedding? Have all the kids been to weddings? I didn't get to go to my first one until I was like 16. There are rules. There are rules about how you share food at weddings, but also how you invite others to eat. And I want to read a very small part from the Bible. It's in a place called Luke, the Gospel of Luke. And he was talking about a feast. He said to the one who had invited him, "When you give a luncheon or a dinner, do not invite your friends or your brothers or your relatives or your rich neighbors, in case they may invite you in return and you would be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind, and you will be blessed, because they cannot repay you, for you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous." You can do your translations there, but it's a reminder that 2,000 and 3,000 years ago, people were coming up for rituals of how important it was to include all at the banquet, to share our food, to make sure this bounty that's not with everyone is not only shared just for the calories, but is shared in the way we have a feast when everything looks really pretty and really nice. So, is every single time that we have food together a sacred time? Probably not. Sacred comes in our awe of the process. It comes when we have the ritual of eating, whether it's your own breakfast or in your holidays, and for the ritual and the repeating. It comes from where we choose to eat, who we choose to connect to, whether it's a close friend or a family member or a stranger or an acquaintance that you've invited to join you for food for the first time. And Thanksgiving is a food holiday. The potential is there. There's a lot of expectations around holidays, not only Thanksgiving. There's chances for disappointment. So sacred doesn't come by just making it look like it's on TV and it's all perfectly presented. I think sacred comes when food is partnered with story and listening and respect. It comes when we honor our own needs and challenges around the holidays. Sacred comes when we make room for one another or a new dish or a change to what was. And mostly, we'll feel the sacred and feel joy when we approach not only Thanksgiving but each meal with gratitude, taking the time to see bounty and extend our lens wide enough to see the other. And in a moment, we're going to have our bread communion together, our second annual ritual here. And we do that to let us know that the gentle care we give one another does matter, that sometimes we need reminders in tangible form. And the sacred, however you name what draws you to higher connection, is needed in our lives. We need times of pause. We need to remind ourselves that food is not automatic. Meals are not automatic. And communities are not automatic. And it is in the sharing that we are strengthened and we feel whole. It is in being intentional that we find hope. May it be so. Now, Kim and I